Welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast, where every week Danny and Maura Vega discuss topics that help families live a healthy and active lifestyle with their little ones, including nutrition and training, peaceful parenting, education, and mindset. To stay up to date, make sure to hit subscribe on this podcast and check out the blog at www.fatfuel.family. You can also find them on Facebook and Instagram at dannyvega.ms, at fatfueledmom, and at fatfueledkids, and Fat Fuel Family on YouTube. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Vega, and I'm joined by my rock solid, confident, not swayed by the hysteria wife.
Oh, no, I'm not swayed by stuff like that.
How are you, my love? Besides tired?
I've never really have been, though. I don't know. I feel like I was born this way. It's really weird.
Yeah,
even when I was younger, I clearly remember being extremely confused by any type of hysteria, like hurricane hysteria. Because we grew up in Miami, so I don't know. It's weird. It's just like a natural thing for me. I don't know.
I'm very cynical when it comes to all this stuff. And like, listen, before we get into this, like we're not like disrespecting the actual virus, you know.
We need
to be cautious and all that stuff. But what we've seen has just been.
Well, the media is the media. You know, we just can't. Why aren't they? I don't know.
They're not sharing any positive.
They never do. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that are surviving and a lot of people that have survived. So
what about talk about the mayor?
Just look about the help. Look for the helpers. There's always people helping. There's always a positive side to everything. So the mayor of Miami, actually, forget his name, but you can just look him up. I think it's Francis something. Suarez.
Yeah.
If you follow him on Instagram, he tested positive for coronavirus. And so he's been documenting his entire journey on his Instagram, which should just give you guys hope because most healthy people, if you do get it, you know.
He's talking normal.
He didn't even cough. I mean, he says he feels fine, no fever. And another thing that was reassuring that he says that 40 of the 40 people that he had come in contact with, they all tested negative. So
what test were they taking?
I don't know about that, to be honest, because I don't know what test is available. I don't know. I'm honestly probably going to call the CDC at some point to find out what test it is that I need to.
Because they're saying that there's cases, so they obviously have a test, right?
But I don't think they do.
But they have a test that they're using.
And I don't know what they're
using. That has an 80% false positive
rate. Right. So I don't know. I don't even know.
Yeah, well, no, I was giving
you. But be cautious. Wash your hands just like you would with any other thing. You know, I don't want the flu. I don't want coronavirus. I don't want a cold. So just, you know, be vigilant and definitely. Because it is a virus and it does have a shedding and incubation period, just like any other virus where you can transmit something without having symptoms yet, we should definitely practice some social distancing just for the next, you know, week or so.
I want to say one more thing before we introduce our guest, because I'm super excited to talk to our guest. And now could not be a better time to talk to our guest. But I just want to say one thing, like, we know that sugar, for example, one of the things Dr. Barry said this weekend that was amazing, he had a live with Dr. Dinick Lantonio, and they were talking about if you're in the hospital and you have high blood sugar, you can't get surgery because there's much more risk of infection if you have high blood sugar.
Of course.
So that coming from doctors to me, and then you pair that with what another friend of ours who's also a doctor.
It lowers your immune system.
It lowers your immune system. But like, you know, it seems like sugar, you know, makes things worse, right?
I mean, always.
And then lifestyle choices are important and nutrition is important.
Right. Drinking alcohol is another one of those things. Like, I know it's huge. Like in Miami, they do hurricane parties and now they're doing coronavirus parties. But like, if we're just drinking a lot of alcohol, we're also going to be lowering our immune systems.
Yeah. But then, you know, you see people like Dr. Paul Saladino, good friend of ours, talking about the importance of nutrition. And commenting that, you know, like a plant-based diet is not going to have all the nutrients that you need. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And then we had...
Definitely supplement then.
We had BioLame talk about how, you know, this guy's using this to sell his book and accusing him of, you know, taking advantage of the situation. And to me, that's what I see him doing. And I think, you know, it's amazing.
I don't understand that. It's just a matter of vitamins. Like, this is easy. This is bio.
Everybody agrees that nutrition plays a role. So I'm happy and confident based on the lifestyle choices that I've made consistently.
Make good choices, guys.
And keep making those good choices. So,
and if you ever wanted to start a low-carb diet, do it. Do it now.
Well, do it slow.
Do it slow, though, because you don't want no keto flu.
Yeah, you don't want a keto flu right now because Maura got the flu.
Yeah.
But let's introduce our guest. I can't wait to talk to him because we have so many things to talk about. Our guest has written an amazing book. Our guest is doing genetic consulting. And so after a long season of bad lifestyle choices derived from stress, this week's guest healed himself and made it his mission to help others heal as well. Trent Holbert is a pastor who focuses on healing of the whole person. This focus led him to become a certified personal trainer, nutritionist, CrossFit and athletic fueling coach, and holistic biohacker. He also hosts the Fit for the Kingdom podcast with weekly encouragement and teaching on living healthy, both physically and spiritually. Trent's unique perspective and experience gives you the upper hand on taking hold of your health and wellness, whether you need to recover from bad lifestyle choices, maybe you need to improve your immune system, or just want to optimize your life. He will give you the tools to ensure your success. Today, we're going to talk about everything from his new book to his genetic counseling with a peer on and all the other stuff he's working on. We're super excited to have him on. Welcome to the show, great friend and second time guest, Trent Holbert. What's up, brother?
What's up, guys? Great to be back.
Oh, we're so happy.
It's great to have you, man. I feel like I'm in this space of like a safe space, like a haven right now, just talking to you and being with you.
So, you're safe with me, brother.
But it's safe in the terms of like just being in a very calm and just rational space right now, because everything around us seems just so crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I have people tell me that all the time, that when they're around me, like, I just feel at peace.
Yeah. You have a calmness.
You do, man. Yeah. You do.
It's stoicism.
Yeah. But I mean, I love it because reading your story, there's so many things that I learned. I mean, I didn't know about your brother. I mean, you know, he died on my birthday, Trent.
Yeah, I did know that, actually.
Yep. Wow. So, so there's so much to talk about, but it's true. Like, it's obviously, you know, this is not something that just came naturally to you. You had to work on it. And obviously what you went through, is a big part in helping you make the habits and make the choices that lead to you being a calm influence on the rest of us.
Yeah, it changed everything. I wish you'd known me before. No, I'm glad you didn't. Like, I'm really glad that you know me now. I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, you didn't want to know this before either.
Yeah, us either. Yeah.
Total life change for the good, though.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's awesome. Look, I honestly believe that you're someone that we need to turn the volume up on your voice, man, because we need positivity. Yes. And we need just someone that can connect all of the physical and the spiritual stuff. And I feel like you do it well, but you know, we always start with that question. What is the most critical problem you're currently trying to solve?
So I agree with you, actually. I think that I think I do have a voice that needs to be heard.
Yeah.
Not me. I mean, I'm not looking to be a personality or famous or anything. I just think that the message needs to be shared. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
The message needs to be shared. So that's really so I'm a speaker. You know, I love being behind the microphone. I love being on the stage. I'm just comfortable speaking. I'm comfortable as a public speaker. And there's not a lot of people that would say that, but 18 years, I think, 18 years, goodness gracious, of being in the ministry, you know, doing this every week has made me comfortable. What I'm not comfortable with is marketing and video. It's not in my wheelhouse. And
I remember you told me you're more uncomfortable in front of a camera by yourself than you are speaking to crowds.
Yes. Yeah. Put me in an auditorium with hundreds or thousands of people. I'm comfortable. Put a camera on me and let me know that it's recording and I freeze up.
Dude, I'm let me tell you, I'm the same way. Like you feed off the audience. If you have to read a script or something, you feel
it's awkward.
Like it's awkward and not authentic. But then if you just go off the cuff, like it's harder
true.
To remember.
I know, that's so true. Danny can go on stage easy at KetoCon. I'm like, were you nervous? No. I'm like,
you know. But how about when I record videos?
Yeah, then when he records videos, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's tough. Well, the video is so static, you know, and I read people, I pick up their vibrations, you know, or whatever you want to call that energy. And I just feel like there's that reciprocation, but the video camera is not reciprocating anything.
Yeah. There's no feedback.
So what I'm doing right now is, and I'm making a huge admission on your podcast. So people, cause they may be like, I don't know this fool. Well, there's a reason. Cause I suck at marketing. I'm horrible at it. I get the concept with the nuts and bolts, and you know, it's weird because I grew up, you know, I'm 40 years old, so I'm an 80s, 90 kid. And, but I suck at technology. I hate it.
I'm not that good at it either. I think it happened when I became a dad. For some reason, I lost all ability to play video games, all ability to work with computers. I don't know why.
I'm with you. Yep. So that's the struggle. The struggle is real.
The struggle is real.
Well, we are surrounding you with people that are better than you in those areas. Just like anybody should when they have somewhere that they need to improve, just surround yourself with the right people.
Yeah. You know what? I grew up like this. I grew up as a farmer's kid out in the country, dead end road, just small rural community, and everybody shared their tools. And so when we were putting out the crops, when we were bringing in the crops, whatever we were doing, neighbors actually shared farm implementation, tools, tractors, wagons, you name it. And I grew up that way. And so I've got that mentality. If I have something that somebody can use, whether it's an experience, some knowledge, or hands-on, I'm happy to do that. And I'm starting to see, like I really am starting to see in our community that's happening like in the health community, like people, influencers like you and Mauda and others that are like, you know what, I've got a set of skills. You need that. Let me help you. And then when I need help, I can trust that you'll be there to help me as well. And I just think that's really, it's just a really cool way of building community.
Yeah.
It's kind of how we used to do it though too, right? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, and even with before we realized that, for example, bartering, which is a little bit different, but I mean, it's incomplete because you can't, if you have like a tractor and I have bushels of some sort of fruit or something, it's just not going to work. But one of the things that you mentioned, I love it. And I feel like late 2019 and then now 2020, we've seen such a surge in joint ventures and people really, at least in this community, really starting to realize that we go further together and that if we, we're not sacrificing anything by teaming up with people. In fact, we increase our platform, we do better financially, we serve more people. So I really love that it feels like we're going in that direction. Maybe it's just the people we're hanging out with, but it feels like we're going in that direction.
I hope so. You might be right. Maybe it's just the people we're hanging out with. We're just...
Yeah, we're in our little bubble. Hey guys, we're going to take a minute right now to tell you about one of our amazing sponsors, Santa Cruz Medicinals. Santa Cruz Medicinals is a company that we've been using for years now. They make high potency, high quality, lab tested CBD formulas at an affordable price. They offer ketogenic, paleo, gluten-free, sugar-free, lab tested formulas.
You all may remember when we did our cannabis series last year. One of the things we learned with CBD is that the research is pretty clear on dosage. 5 to 20 grams per kilogram is what you should be taking per day. And most of the quote-unquote CBD you see online and on Amazon is severely underdosed. Most of these products are offering dosages that are so low, you'd have to down a bottle a day. That's why we love Santa Cruz Medicinals, because they offer highly dosed, potent CBD with clean ingredients, and they have several cool products, but we want to share our favorites with you. So what are your favorites, my love?
All of them? No, really. I have yet to try a product from them that I don't love. However, I will talk about some of my ride or die products.
So during my cycle, I get horrible migraines, guys. And my go-to is definitely their peppermint tincture or the 10,000 milligrams to get a potent anti-inflammatory dose. Peppermint has been shown in studies to relieve migraine pain. But let's talk about the pain salve real quick, because this I use for almost everything. And everyone in this household agrees we cannot live without it. So the CBD pain salve, it has clean ingredients that you can trust, but it also has peppermint, which really, really helps. And so what I like to do is I'll rub some on my temples, and it really provides instant relief for me when I have bad headaches. But of course, I'll use it as well for any muscle pain that I have.
Well, I'm personally a huge fan of the 10,000 milligram bottles of CBD in MCT oil. I put it in my coffee, and then again at night, I'll put some more in, like some broth or whatever drink I'm drinking, a hot tea, to get an adequate dose for the day. I also love the pain salve, especially when I'm extra sore. We usually take turns massaging it onto each other, and it always does the job. You guys also have to try the new CBD-infused hemp and collagen protein. If you're a fan of horchata, you will love this one.
Oh, that one is so good, guys. We just tried it, and it is so good. So yeah, if you're interested, check them out. You can find them at scmedicinals.com. And of course, don't forget to use the code FatFueledMom at checkout to save 15% on your order and get free shipping, guys.
So I gotta ask, Trent, what do you make of everything going on right now with this whole coronavirus situation? You know, we had our church cancel live services, and I know that you preached this weekend, but what are your thoughts on it? And what does the Bible say about how we should, you know, as Christians and believers, how should we respond to situations like this?
Yeah, great question. I've had a lot of, you can imagine, a lot of conversations here recently. And, you know, I had a recent conversation with my mother who missed out on her church worship service. But she's, you know, she's in that senior adult population with a compromised immune system. And yep. So is my dad. He already has some upper respiratory stuff going on. And she really felt, she felt so guilty. She's like, I hate this. I don't want to miss church, and so on and so forth. And she, but her thing was, I feel like I'm not exercising faith. Well, here's where I stand on that. We're looking at a situation that we're not entirely sure what is going on. Because I don't think that all of the facts are being relayed as accurately in real time. And I certainly don't know all the details of what's going on. But the fact of the matter remains that God's given us two things to operate by. One is faith, but the other is common sense.
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, well, you just need to carry on and operate and ignore it and just have faith that God's going to protect you. But so I don't believe that blind faith is the faith that the Bible is talking about. There's always an assurance to our faith. Christ always gives some sort of assurance there. And so where I do have faith in God, I believe that he's going to get me across the road, but I still have enough common sense to look both ways when I do it.
Right.
Yes.
And exactly. So when it comes to facing issues like this in our culture or society, my trust is in God. And here's the thing, and this is what it looks like. He can take me home if he wants to, and he can use the coronavirus if that's what he chooses to do. My faith is still in him regardless of what happens, but I'm still going to wash my hands.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I just believe in being practical. You know, first of all, just be practical. I live by this: when you don't know what to do, do what you know to do. Mm-hmm. And so in a time of a lot of uncertainty, you still know to wash your hands. You know?
Well, doesn't it also say, like, in the Bible, you would know more, like, don't test. You're not supposed to test God, you know, it's just because he is our protector. Doesn't mean I'm going to exactly throw myself off a cliff.
Exactly. A lot of people try to prove something with their faith. But right. They're in essence just testing God or tempting God. It's as if a man was, let's say he just pulled off his seatbelt and decided to drive down a curvy road 100 miles an hour and just says, you know what, I'm just doing this to show that I trust God. That's a disrespectful trust, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more ego, right? It seems ego driven.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really, honestly, it goes back to the temptation of Satan to Christ in the wilderness when he said, you know, he's standing on the tallest pinnacle of there in Jerusalem and says, toss yourself off, because isn't it written that the Son of Man won't dash his foot against a stone, but that his angels, he will give his angels charge. And so that was even Satan's kind of temptation, if you will, or testing to even Jesus Christ. Like, well, you know, God's not going to let you die, so just go ahead and do this and prove to everyone.
Right.
But, you know, Jesus used the word of God against him and said, have you not read, do not tempt the Lord thy God.
Right.
And so I just think that we need to be practical and prayerful.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. Love that.
You know, you actually mentioned this in your book. It's a great segue to my next question, because, you know, the church as a building is it's a modern invention. You know, the church, the way it's translated is mm-hmm. just the group of people that have chosen to follow Jesus. Right.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, I posted a video Sunday afternoon, because you're right, we did have church service. We even recorded that church service. We put it out. But I know a lot of people weren't able to go, and there was a disruption in people's lives, and it was awkward. It was just reading the posts and everything. Did you happen to see the video that I posted?
Is it the one that you
talked about? Yeah, the one about church services?
Yeah. So, because it really brought to my attention that this can be used as a great blessing.
Right.
If we lean into it, we need not lose our heads.
Oh yeah. Being at home and communing with people. Yes. Yes. I remember.
Yeah. That. So great. Like, you know, the church got started in homes. And when you read the New Testament, there are several examples of Paul addressing the church, quote unquote, in so-and-so's home. And it wasn't until about 300 AD was the first time, or through Constantine's rule, that an actual building was established for dedicated Christian, you know, style worship. And so the early church knew this. But we've forgotten it, and we now have generations in America that have never experienced it. Of course, the Puritans early on, they did as well, but one of the first things that they did is started erecting churches that operated as public meeting houses and government as well. But we don't have that, like, not in my generation, not in my parents' or even my grandparents' generation. And so I think it's kind of a cool thing. Like, you know what? This kind of forcibly puts us back into a situation that's actually conducive to relational, you know, deep, intimate relationship building seated around a table, a meal in our living rooms. Like, that is so precious. Like, that's so cool. We do that even still, like our church, we do that throughout the week in different small groups. And man, I can't tell you how rewarding it is. And so I just see the blessing in it.
Yep.
I agree. I got to tell you, the first church we went to when we came to Brandon, the only thing keeping us in that church, because it was so massive, was our connect group,
our life group,
you know. Yeah. And so the other thing, what was it, the other thing you mentioned, I just think it's a great opportunity for people to just take control of their spiritual life and take a more active role, and not just, I mean, we get served for free every single weekend with an awesome message, you know, and we're giving, you know, and we're doing everything that we need to do, but we get served. And I don't think there's anything wrong with us saying, hey, we can open this book up right now and talk about whatever we want to. I can tell you, our Bible study ain't canceled this Saturday. We're going to do it at our pool outside in open air.
Some vitamin D.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point. Like, families subcontract churches to raise their kids' spiritual lives,
good
develop
point.
Them spiritually. And that's what, you know, a youth pastor is a subcontracted pastor, because parents should be the youth pastors
for
their children. And the fathers, you know, pastors are subcontracted priests of the home, because a lot of fathers are not, and husbands are not leading their families spiritually.
Yeah.
And we're only leaving it up to the professionals, so to speak. This helps us. Like, let's go back, and as families, dads, become the priest of your home, right? Parents, become the ministers of your children. And the Bible says that we should teach these things when you rise up in the morning, when you lay down at night, when you go about your day. And so, and by the way, did you know that in Jewish culture, like going back to Old Testament, or even, well, New Testament as well, just historically Jewish culture, that the mother would teach the children up until age 12 when they went to synagogue, went to school. But by the time they entered synagogue, they would have they would have memorized the five books of the Torah.
Wow.
So there's a lot of education going on that's coming from the home. And I think that we've just left it all up to the church, to the hired professionals and ministers of the church to do that. And this gives us opportunity to take it back to the home and start to really do that right. Do it again.
Yeah. I don't want my son to, or both of my sons. I saved my son because Desmond is the one that I'm really having these conversations with. And I don't want him to, compartmentalize, you know, I want to talk to my church elders about spiritual things. I want to talk to my dad about everything else. I see it as my duty to help him connect, you know, what he learned in church to practical life and have those conversations. Because, I mean, number one, he's going to just receive it and really ingrain it so much more. But number two, we're connecting and he's seeing me as the spiritual leader. And then he sees that as a role that he needs to step into when he becomes a man.
You know, it's worse for me because I am the professional. Like, you know how, you know, there's the stereotype with preacher's kids.
Yep.
Daggone hellions. And a large reason of that, and I'm not saying that in every case, but a large reason of that, and I know a lot of preacher's kids, is because they saw dad in the pulpit one way, but he was very different at home.
Ooh, yeah.
Right.
And so it's important for me to remember, like, I really need to step it up and be the priest of my home. Like, that takes precedent.
Yeah.
That's priority. And I want my kids to hear the man in the pulpit and hear the message that he's preaching, but watch him live that message behind closed doors of our home.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. And then you have Mandy, who is just amazing. I get goosebumps thinking about it because, you know, like, her knowledge, her relationship with God is just so amazing. And like, my wife is in the same, but I view Maud as the same position. It's amazing. Like, we're talking about 6 years, 7 years, you know, she was saved, you know, in August of 2011, I think. Was that it?
Yeah.
And I mean, she's just dove in like first, you know, head first.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's holistic. That is holistic.
It was always missing though. Like, I don't know. It's a weird feeling that I get when it comes to that. Because I feel like I was technically saved, but I felt like I was lost. But like, I don't know. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I love it because you were like, wait a second, what is this praise and worship? Like, this is not what I'm used to. And like, her only exposure was Catholic Church.
And then Pentecostal.
And then Pentecostal.
I'm like, y'all both can, I don't know.
She wasn't
like,
ready.
I'm mad at both of you.
She wasn't ready for the fruits of the Spirit.
They were way too intense. Yeah. Because don't get me wrong, the Pentecostal stuff and the fruits of the Spirit and all the rabbit hole stuff, I'm very.
She loves it. She loves prophecy. She digs all into it.
Like, right now, you know, I'm like all up in it. I'm like, where's the prophecies? Like, where's all this stuff? But when I was younger and I had just had the Catholic experience, and then my only exposure to a Christian church was a Pentecostal church, which, you know, the one.
Yeah, that's where I was saved. Yeah.
And I must have been like 10 or 12 years old. I went with my grandma and it was in Spanish, which is even worse.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it was like
3 hours.
I was there for hours and people were like throwing themselves on the floor and like, you know, speaking in tongues. And I was just like, I don't even know what's going on right now. Yeah. I don't even know what's going on. I was not ready.
That's quite the extremes from Catholic to Pentecostal.
Yeah, we found a nice little Baptist church in Pembroke Pines where we were going at the time, and
Oasis,
and they had reggae praise and worship.
Remember, I know that? I was like, okay,
amazing.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this book, man, because you just published an amazing book, and you know, I'm more than three quarters of the way done with it. I want to start with the various challenges you faced and the actual link to your decline in health. So obviously your brother passed away. You had all types of drama with one of the churches where you worked. You lost the building to a fire. And meanwhile, this whole time you're getting scoliosis, you're diagnosed with hereditary angioedema. Tell us about, you know, these events and how they affected your health, and then what your breaking point was that led to your amazing transformation.
You know, it's interesting that like a lot of people just need to get the book, because I've never shared this information until now.
Yeah. Gosh.
You and I, the three of us were together, along with Mandy and others a couple of weeks ago, or I guess it's been a week ago, hasn't it?
Yeah. 1 week ago.
And, while we were there at that conference, my mother was reading the book that weekend. And so when we left the conference and we were driving back to Asheville, we stopped to pick up my boys who were staying with her and my dad. And she just gave me a big hug and held me and cried, because she never knew those things. She just didn't know. And she said, I feel like I failed you, because she didn't know what was going on in my life. But to me, that wasn't her fault. To answer your question, always had this mentality, that kind of this inside mantra, don't worry about the mule, just load the cart. If somebody would say, you know, you need to rest, you need to pull back, you're doing too much, I would just say, don't worry about the mule, just load the cart. Meaning I've got this, you know, this strength. And it's an egotistical work ethic is what it is.
Yep.
And so, you know, having that work ethic that neglected Sabbath, neglected self-care, neglected recovery, coupled with a bad diet, internal, constant, chronic emotional stress, it just compounds, right? Like it just grows bigger and bigger and bigger. And one day that mantra changes, and it changed from don't worry about the mule, just load the cart, to fake it until you make it.
Right.
Because I'd realized the brokenness was there. I just didn't want anyone else to see it. Well, that only made things worse.
Yeah.
Because now I'm operating out of this false strength. All of my strength was gone. Now what I'm posing is false. And so you read in the book this massive decline that came about through trauma from years earlier that wasn't dealt with. So in the book, it brings out some psychological and emotional issues, some you know, mental health issues.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't dealt with when it should have been. It came back 10 years later and haunted me, really destroyed me emotionally. And then you also see how that relates to, and they're all tied together holistically, the depletion of my adrenal glands, overtaxing them with cortisol, the stress hormone, adding on body weight, low energy, being 20 some years old and feeling like an 80-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so eventually just everything, the house eventually, when it's on fire, eventually will collapse. And so you see that in the book, there's that inevitable ultimate collapse of everything.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tough to read, man. I was on the flight reading that, and it was definitely intense, but I see it with Mauda. You know, like if we're in March right now, she is so stressed because of things that started in November. And I see those things, how they build up. Sometimes it's out of my control. I try to do my best, but like they build up.
Yeah, life is just so busy.
And sometimes you don't notice, but now we're aware of it because it's happened to her before. So it's like, I need to be more understanding, because that's, you know, since I can't identify with it.
Yeah, you can. Well, we're just different people. Like nothing happens to you. Well, actually something did finally, you know what I mean?
Maybe it just takes me longer because of
yeah, my like genetics. The thing, what's my thing that I'm like
the what do you call that? Jackhammer.
Right. Right. Well, you can do that to your life. You can travel constantly and basically run yourself into the ground with very little consequences. If I do that for like a week, I'm done.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
I feel like
different.
Yeah. So, because, you know, just like that's the way we are, like the way we absorb energy, like Dini gets energy from being around a lot of people. Like he could go to KetoCon, and even though it's kind of exhausting for him, he still had fun, or like it's still like not as bad. Like where I leave and I'm like, I feel like
zap.
I feel, yeah. I'm like, thanks, guys. You just took all of my energy completely out of me.
But, you know, and for me, and I didn't know like I always had a theory, but I never put it to the test until recently. Why am I this way? Why do I hold things in? Like, why can't I just seem to express joy and happiness and receive love and all of these things? Which that was then. I do much better now, but I always had this theory, like my mother's this way, my grandfather was this way, and I said, it's genetic. Right. And it just made me feel better. And so then recently, or this has been about a year ago, I did a HPA gene test, or HPAG, which is gut hypothalamic pituitary axis gut neurotransmitter test. And so I tested all the neurotransmitters in my brain, not just the levels, but their abilities. And I found out, I actually concluded what I'd always theorized, and that is that my brain, for one reason or another, just, or my gut, I should say, more specifically, just does not produce optimal levels of neurotransmitters that are mood altering or mood enhancing. And so my serotonin and dopamine levels are rock bottom. My GABA levels are rock bottom. Ooh. But my norepinephrine levels, my adrenaline, all that is skyrocketing. And so my doctor looked at me and he said, I don't even know how you're functioning.
Wow.
So we can look at externals, you know, we can look at circumstances, and definitely my circumstances were bad, but couple that with physiology, and you have a perfect storm.
I can relate to that. I can relate to that, especially now that we're starting to learn so much about genetics. I mean, I'm pretty much, it's only a matter of time. I'm going to definitely have you interpret my DNA at some point. But yeah, I mean, it all just makes sense. Like, I have the same issues. I have the same issues with neurotransmitters in my DNA. My DNA also tells me that I'm higher stress. So there's that. So it's like I'm already kind of like going, like battling uphill, you know, like trying to climb out of quicksand. Yeah. So I can.
And then your addiction also.
And then my addiction that I had, you know, just my whole life, you know, with the trauma and the addiction, that doesn't help. You know, it just makes everything worse. Yeah.
But so, you know, we have identified addiction genes. And so we look at some people and wonder why they can operate, in moderate, you know, mm-hmm. in other people, in Mandy, like my wife is always, she's like, I don't have any tattoos and there's a reason. She won't let me. She's like, you won't get one. You'll get one. And then you're just going to get.
You'll have like tattoos on your face.
I'll be the lizard guy. And, so I was interpreting my genes, and I found even, one of my genes is expressed in, I've got an addiction to snacking and sweets.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people are probably like, yep, that's my gene.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm sure Danny probably has that too.
Yeah.
Danny's not a good, for some reason, it's, I don't know. There's certain things that kind of don't add up for me, but I think it's mostly, I don't think it's that I'm not expressing my addiction in that way. I think, like, for example, I am obviously a textbook addict, but when it comes to food, I have a lot of control, but I don't think it's because I'm not an addict in that sense. I just think it's because I was addicted to losing weight before. So I have just been able to train my body. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just different for me with food, even though I can binge here and there, but let's get back to your book because I really want to dig into this stuff. So, you know, Danny was talking about, you know, that hard time in your life and you know, your journal entries during that period were bleak to say the least, but you started to see the connection between your physical health, your diet, and your spiritual health. So tell us a little bit more about that and tell us what you mean when you talk about holistic health.
Yeah. So I know it's a buzzword today. Everybody's using holistic here in Asheville. This is no joke. We have holistic dentists, holistic veterinarians, and a holistic tattoo shop. but I feel like that I come to the table with credit because, you know, here I am. Well, I see holistic body, mind, and spirit. And so spiritual, here I've come to the table with nearly 20 years of full-time ministry, seminary degree, years and years of education, practice, walking with people in their spiritual life, developing spiritual disciplines, helping people to do that. That's just been a long, long time. But also having the experience with personal training, nutrition training, coaching, consultations, really digging into the deep science of nutrition and health. And then the experience of mental health, you know, personally and in the ministry as well. And so I bring to the table this perspective, what I feel like is a very balanced perspective of holistic health and how they correlate, they interact with each other. And so when I'd reached my end, it was a realization that I was broken in all three spheres. I was broken physically because I had this hereditary angioedema, the scoliosis, and was overweight, and just my entire body was oxidized with inflammation. It was inflamed. It was just hurting all the time. It was obvious that I had emotional breakdown because of the stress, and I had a spiritual breakdown because, not that I lost faith in God, but I misplaced my identity. Like, I didn't know who I was. And so I couldn't find God in that sense. I'm praying, but I couldn't hear him. I'm searching, but I couldn't find him. And though he never left me and I never lost my faith in him, I was just what I called a lost ball in tall weeds. Just felt like I was floating, without that anchor, you know. And so when I realized that, I realized that my only salvation then was going to be a holistic salvation. Like, I could not just heal one way. I could not just heal spiritually, because if I just healed spiritually, what does that even look like if I'm not able physically to carry out what God wants me to do?
Is it even possible?
Not in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I always ask the question, are you physically able to carry out what God's purpose is for your life? And, you know, because people say, well, you're a fitness nut. You're right. But I'm also a spirit nut, because I'm both. I'm physical and I'm spiritual. Right. I'm a spirit. And you tell me, how well will you live without your body? There's a term for that. We call it death.
Yeah.
When the spirit leaves the body.
And it's all the health, you know, like even mental health. Like, if I'm not mentally healthy,
yeah,
can't be a good mom. I can't do anything. I mean, I'm just might as well just go lay down.
Sometimes you feel like that's
and
what
I want to.
Well, so I started to implement rules and practices in my life, and I found out, like, you know what, if I clear up my diet, guess what's going to happen? Fat's going to come off. That's good. But the whole food that I'm eating is going to recolonize my gut. That is going to feed my bacteria, that's going to produce neurotransmitters, that's going to make me feel better emotionally. And by the way, when that happens and I begin to feel more clear-minded and focused and cognitive, that's what happens in essence to my prayer life. And now I'm able to be more attentive, to be more focused and meditative on hearing from God and praying to him and all of these things. And so I take it back to, yeah, here's how I did it physically. Yeah. I mean, I implemented this diet, this exercise, physical therapy, et cetera. I sought out mentors and I worked with them through emotional turmoil to come to some solutions. And spiritually, I clung to these scriptures. I, you know, kept my faith here, but none of that would have happened if I hadn't have changed the diet. Like, I had to go back to the most fundamental thing of life, the thing that God introduced Adam and Eve to, the most talked about topic from the creation story is food and a garden. Wow. And how to tend it and how not, you know, what to do. The very first thing that when we're born, other than sucking in oxygen into our lungs, the very first thing that we want to do is eat. And that urge doesn't stop until we're dead. And so food is so important that it does affect us. The obvious is physical, but it does affect us emotional, and it does affect us spiritual. And so that's the message in the book that I was really trying to convey and get out.
Man, I really think you did. I think it's important for especially other pastors to take a look at this stuff. You know, like, we all have our blind spots. I mean, we can, there's no shortage of issues in the church right now. I mean, we know that, you know, what is it? Half of men have a porn addiction. Porn,
yeah.
And then we have all the stuff going on where, you know, there's either gluttony or whatever you want to call it, but, you know, we can't have obese pastors. I mean, they're missing something, you know, I'm not making a moral judgment on them at all. I think it definitely makes the message less effective.
Right. No, but and I think you'll see in the takeaway from the book that I bring this concept out from a very non-judgmental or condemning spirit.
Absolutely.
And one reason is because I lived it, but you'll see a scenario or a story. And I don't know if you've gotten to this point yet, but I actually draw an illustration to help people to connect these dots and using a fictional pastor as an example, who here's this man who he's over 40. And so biologically his testosterone is starting to drop. Unless he were to mitigate that, it's naturally, it's just going to drop. And he's spending all of his time in his office, in car rides, doing visitation, not getting in any exercise and having to stop off at fast food restaurants and pick up a quick meal. So we're seeing drop in testosterone, bad diet, no exercise, sedentary. Things are going to happen in his body. One of those things is erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
And he's going to lose sexual performance. And he's going to accumulate shame and embarrassment. But what happens to his wife? Well, he's not talking to her about it as much. I mean, he's really embarrassed about this. She thinks, though, he's no longer attracted to her. And so she's feeling cut off and distant and unworthy and devalued. And so their marriage starts to break down. But he still has to report to deacons. He still has to perform as a pastor in the church. He still has to keep up with his duties. And so he's dealing with this chronic stress. He's dealing with a lack of confidence in his marriage, which translates to a lack of confidence in his job performance, which then begins to suffer. And so there's business meetings and deacons meetings, and people are writing letters and making comments. And so this man is starting to hang his head, and his health is declining to the point that he's now suffering from chronic disease, such as type 2 diabetes, morbid obesity, and just a lot of damaging factors health-wise. End of story, right? We see that story played out. I mean, if you look at the landscape of American church, you see that story played out in so many of our churches.
Yep.
Yeah.
But let's reverse it. What would happen if this same man noticed that his testosterone or was at least cognizant of the levels of his testosterone beginning to drop, and he began to clean up his diet, begin to exercise? Someone asked me the other day, what's the best exercise for boosting testosterone? I said, and Danny, correct me if I'm wrong, get under a barbell and squat heavy.
Oh yeah, man. Yep. Yeah. Like multi-joint movements give you great testosterone surges, even growth hormone.
Yeah, exactly. And so I said, you know, here's this guy. We're gonna switch this up. He is eating whole food. He's exercising, compound heavy movements. He's building his testosterone. He's performing well as a plus 40-year-old male in the bedroom. He's losing weight. Body composition is looking, feeling better. He has energy.
Yeah.
And mental energy. Now he has confidence, and his wife is feeling great, because her man is coming home attracted to her. He has vigor. And so the marriage is stronger. He walks into his church and and this could be translated into any business setting, but he walks in full of confidence and joy, and his performance goes up and his life is changed.
Yeah.
How did he do that? Yeah. He started to look at the holistic model of his health, of diet, of exercise, of, spiritual and emotional and all that together.
Yeah, it's amazing how we just take a few steps. And like, I'm noticing this theme of like how all these different areas are connected, and it's how we raise our kids, you know, like, you know, the way we educate them is connected to the way we feed them and all of those things. And I think that this is no different. And it's, again, great segue for my next question, because My favorite theme of this whole book, and I'm sure it's probably the main theme, is, you know, the way you frame this connection that exists between how we approach eating as Christians. You know, first of all, every meal is an opportunity for us to recognize God's grace and his provision. And it turns out there's a physical connection to approaching food with gratitude, which I'd love for you to talk about. But, you know, secondly, we should approach food the way we approach everything in life. The Bible says to approach all those things, you know, in this, with the same fervor and the same commitment. But we seem to miss that altogether. And you mentioned this, the word gluttony, it's not even in our modern vernacular. And then lastly, there's so many instances in the Bible where what we decide to put into our mouths not only had implications for our spiritual health, but also our physical health, along with obviously future implications for all of humanity. Please unpack all of this for us, because it's just, it's so powerful. And I don't want to give the whole book away, but I think this is one of those themes where maybe you can talk a little bit about these important, this connection to what we eat and why it's so important. It's something that we shouldn't ignore.
You mean as far as society, or like, give me a specific?
Well, I mean, okay. So you talk about like you relate. There's a lot of things that I want anybody who's listening to this right now, just have an open mind, you know, whether you believe what we believe or not, just realize that there's a physical, for example, the connection between,
yeah. You know, and you're right, because you don't have to be a Christian to read this book. And it is drawn from my perspective. But any person of faith, which in essence we all are, like, it doesn't, you know, I think everyone is pretty well satisfied that there's something greater than us.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go into any culture who has a religion. I don't know that any that doesn't. And there, you'll see how they relate food in some way, whether it's praying to the god or gods for harvest, for rain, giving a sacrifice of food, a food offering,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And so there's just something innate in us that connects food to our creator,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. Because we know that's one thing that we are not able to create, and we're not able to control. Mm-hmm. We do our best to manage it. But what we find is that when we look around in our modern world, we don't do a very good job of that.
Nope, we've lost that.
The monocrop farming and large industrial farming and the abuse of the land, we're not doing a very good job of it.
Nope.
And so man just innately knows that this is something that's provided, and it's something that is needed. And so when you see that there's something that you need, but that you cannot provide, then there's gratitude for it.
Yeah.
And when we start to express a spirit of gratitude, it not only changes us spiritually and emotionally, but it even changes us physically. Yeah. There's a reason why when I sit down to eat, I pause for a moment and I say a prayer and just a moment of gratitude and thanksgiving, because our bodies, for instance, our bodies cannot absorb nutrients when it's in a fight or flight state. Yeah. The body's sending signals that it puts feeding on the back burner so that it can prioritize the energy system for an emergency situation. But when we're a people that are living in constant stress, we're constantly living in that fight or flight mode, then we're not digesting our food. We're not absorbing our nutrients. And so it's important that, I mean, if we come with this spirit of gratitude, then we actually set our bodies up to receive what we're grateful for,
yep.
that food. Once your body's even able to absorb it the way that it's supposed to, because you've shown gratitude because of the spiritual connection, now your body's going to tap into those nutrients, and it's going to do what it's designed to do, which is to fuel and heal itself, like the Wolverine effect of actually producing its own biological pharmaceuticals to heal whatever disease, sickness, infirmity it has. It's going to go to work and take care of that, and prevention, you know, preventing other invaders from taking over and causing damage. So it makes a full circle, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That is so cool how it does that. I mean, for anyone who's paying attention.
Yeah, so, yeah, I hope that answered your question anyway, or a little bit of it. And I can go
100. No, 100%. There was the only other thing that I wanted to bring up was I loved how the point that you made about how you reminded me when you started talking about the way we do agriculture, our, you know, clustered feeding operations, these CAFO operations, yeah, all these things. And because of that, it's maximum yield. And so we live in such a time of abundance,
yeah,
that we can go to the store and just fill our bellies with all this food and throw half of it away. And yeah, because of that abundance, we've lost it. I mean, I always think about you, man. I told Maura even yesterday, I was like, look at the amount of coffee mugs that we have. And I just, yeah, every time I look at them, I'm just thinking like,
coffee mugs are like, they're collector's items.
Yeah. But it's like, but I just remember what Trent did with his family. They all had one cup, one plate, one fork, and one knife.
It's the best thing ever because I'm in the dishes too.
Yeah.
there's a little bit of that too.
Well, I was implementing because you told me that when I wanted to implement that rule, I was like, okay, because you know, now everyone's home. Like Danny is home now. He's not working outside the home. So now we have all of these, and then the kids, when they're homeschooled, it's so much different. I'm sure like, you know, parents will feel me on this now. The ones that usually send their kids to school, they will start to realize like how many more dishes we have now that they're home because they're eating in your house all day. So I'm like, guys, this is your plate for the day.
Right.
This is, yep, your one fork. When you eat, clean it and use the same one.
Think about this though. What we're seeing, toilet paper, like people.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The panic buying. Now this takes us back to the beginning of our conversation. Let's go back to faith.
Yeah.
Yep.
The reason that we panic buy and the reason that we hoard is because of a lack of faith.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid. Fear is the root. And by the way, fear is the most dangerous virus that you can spread.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And so people are afraid that this thing is going to run out and there won't be enough for me. So that's what large industrial farming does. That's what we're doing, feeding into it. Well, we need to make sure that we have massive supply, these high yield crops. Now, this lesson was attempted to be taught in the Old Testament with Moses and the children of Israel that had recently come out of slavery, and they didn't have food for 2 million plus people. But Moses prayed and God rained down manna. But his instructions were to collect one jar a day. And if you collect more than what that jar can hold, then it will rot, in which it did. The next day, they would find that it was rotted. He said, but only take what is enough for this day. Yep. And that was to show them that he's going to provide again tomorrow. Yep. Fast forward to the New Testament, and the disciples are asking Jesus, teach us how to pray. And he said, well, do it this way. When you pray, and you pray to your Father, which art in heaven, and you say, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And he makes a request. After he's done worshiping, he's spending that time of prayer and worship and adoration, he makes a request. Give us today our daily bread.
Yeah.
And I wonder how many of us live that way. Like how many of us are living in, and I'm not saying that you only keep one loaf, you know, one item of food and then go to the grocery store every single day, but are we living with that type of faith?
Yeah.
That I'm going to trust you for this day. I'm not going to worry about tomorrow. There's going to be toilet paper back on the shelves. I'm not going to, you know, like, yeah. So I think it all goes back to faith. It all goes back to, well, those two things, fear and faith. And monocrop industrialized farming is a nation that once trusted God to provide has now reached a point of we're afraid we may not have it. We need to exercise, excess, right, so that we're certain that we have it.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, so good. I love all this talk about food. And, you know, in the book, you also talk about how our relationship with food and God changed when Jesus showed up. Can you talk about that and how it kind of like changed your views, your view of our obligations to the Lord and how you approach food in general?
Yeah, I really begin to see food as being something that's holy. Again, because I don't provide food. I receive food.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he gave Adam and Eve this amazing opportunity. And he just said, you know, steward the earth, be fruitful, and multiply. Basically saying, take responsibility and enjoy what I've given you and have lots of sex.
Right.
And I'm like, that's pretty cool. You know, Adam and Eve.
Pretty darn good.
You got it going on. But there's that one tree, right? That one tree that he says, don't eat of that fruit. So food was a connection because it was a connection of blessing because they have been given all of this food to enjoy. And it was given for dependency because it was God that was providing it. So you had this amazing relationship with God via food. But it was also food that destroyed that relationship because as the New Testament says, that's the lust of the flesh and the pride of life that destroys us ultimately. And Eve saw the tree was good for food, but she also heard an enticing message because the serpent, you know, deceived her and said, well, God knows in the day that you eat of this fruit, your eyes will be open and you'll be like God. And so there's the pride of life. And so even through the act of food, we lost this amazing connection with God. And I've ever since then just not been able to connect with God in the same way, to have that perfect communion. So how do we get that perfect communion back? That's what we're always longing for. Every addiction is a yearning for God. You know, every sense of brokenness is a yearning for a solution and to have God in our life, whether we've identified him or not. So humanity is always trying to get back there, get back to the garden with this perfect communion with the one that created us and the one that provides for us. And so we try, you know, we look through the Old Testament and there was offerings of food. There were food laws, God using laws of kosher to teach people how to obey him. But we still couldn't keep those laws. We just could not do it. And I think we're always going to find that we cannot come to God on our own. And so when we look at the garden, and this is something that I think you might be interested in, is that the invention of carbohydrates or breads, starches, that God had given them garden fresh food in the garden. And it wasn't until they had broken his law, they'd sinned against him, that the Bible says that God placed a curse upon the land. It doesn't say on Adam. It says on the land, and it began to produce thorns and thistles. And he said, you will work by the sweat of your brow to clear these things. But it also brought forth seed bearing plants. And he said, and you will eat of this food until you die. They'd never really heard that concept before. What do you mean die? And so he didn't create a bad food. He created an inferior food. And so the grains, the breads, these starchy carbohydrates have always been a reminder to us, because we know in the health world they cause inflammation and chronic diseases and or you know problems, health problems, and obesity, et cetera. This inferior food is always pointed to one that would come that is superior. And so usher in a baby born in a manger in a town whose translation in Hebrew it would be Bethlehem. That's my Jewish accent.
love it.
But it means house of bread. And so God, you know, he brings bread out of the ground as a curse. He brings bread from heaven to sustain them, though it wasn't fulfilling in the wilderness. So eventually he brings another bread from heaven, and that is ultimately fulfilling, ultimately satisfying. Doesn't cause damage, but creates healing. This is the bread of the nations. And this is the one that Jesus said of himself, this is the bread that has come from heaven. And if you eat of this bread, you will never be hungry again. And so he then later on represents his own body just before the cross by breaking a piece of bread and saying, this is my body. Take and eat and do this in remembrance of me. And so Jesus, you know, it's always been a foreshadowing or a typification of pointing to the one that can restore all that was lost in the garden.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, it's funny, you stole our thunder because we were gonna tee it up for you and be like, what's your theory on, you know, the
Adam and Eve's
decision and how it affected, you know, and led to things like wheat, you know, like and all these other things.
Go ahead,
my love.
Well, I've heard a lot of Christians defend their food choices this way.
Yeah.
Saying bread is what they eat in the Bible.
Yeah, so I wish Jesus would have broken up like
jerky or something.
Or maybe like a nice little lamb leg, you know, pull apart a lamb leg, give them a chop or something.
Yeah, I get that argument all the time about bread, and we got to be real honest here and admit that their bread is not our bread.
Well, that's
it's unleavened too, right?
The Passover, the Passover bread was unleavened.
Oh, just during Passover, you're right.
Yeah, but they're dealing with grains that haven't been, there's no GMO.
Yep.
The soil conditions are much better.
Yeah, it was probably fermented.
Exactly right. And they're eating in moderation and they're leading active lives. They're totally different. You just cannot compare.
Yeah, it's not the same as
nevertheless,
enriched,
we see the
bleached, you know, flour.
Exactly. They didn't have to enrich their bread with vitamins and nutrients. But even still, I mean, bread is bread. And so we know what factors lead to a lifestyle that is predominant in eating bread. Not good. But there is a bread that is good. You know, Jesus, we can have all that bread we want.
The bread of life.
Yeah. You know, I feel like you've kind of talked about this one too, but why not hammer the point home a little bit more, because we're talking about Jesus now. So he seems to use food as his greatest illustrator when it comes to the miracles he performed and the stories and the parables he told. Why do you think he chose food? I mean, I kind of know the answer, but I just want to hear your take on it.
Yeah. Jesus was a foodie.
I love how you said that in the book.
Yep, he was a foodie. God's a foodie. When God created Adam and Eve, what did he do? He fellowshiped with them in the garden. I mean, so you've got this beautiful relationship of the creator and his creation, and they're just enjoying fellowship around meal.
Yeah.
That has not changed. It's never changed. And so Jesus, when he comes onto the scene, he's going to weddings, right? He's partying it up. Let's not deny this. He is at weddings, turning water into wine. He is at celebrations. The Bible is loaded full of feasts. You know, God identifies, the seven major feasts, and festivals of the Old Testament. And they all point to Jesus. They all point to the Messiah. And so when Jesus comes, he's still using food and he's inviting sinners to come dine with him, because again, it's an intimate relationship when you sit at a table and you enjoy a meal together. That's showing intimacy. So Jesus is constantly using food to show he's tearing down walls. He's breaking cultural barriers. He's destroying racism.
Oh yeah. Eating with the sinners. Yeah. Yes. That's another great thing.
Yeah. So you see him always doing this, going into people's homes that others would see as less or lower. And Jesus is going in and doing the most intimate thing that he can. He's eating with them. And so this is just, again, God's message to us is how much he loves us. This was a portrayal of his love even before the cross. And what's interesting is because the cross did happen and his death did happen, and he's no longer here on earth, and as Christians, we anticipate a time to be with him again. What's so interesting is what God has promised when we come home, so to speak. When you think about when all of this is said and done, we're in heaven, we're, you know, the bride going to be with the bridegroom. It's a wedding scenario, but the wedding happened when we were saved. We were united. We became the bride of the bridegroom Christ when we got saved. So what happens when we go home? What happens when we go to heaven? The Bible says is a banquet. It's the wedding banquet. It's not a dance. It's not a dance off. It's not a concert. It's interesting that the activity that we're going to be enjoying when we get to heaven is going to be this massive pig out, right? This banquet. So I just think that Jesus continued to convey the message to mankind that I love you. Let's sit down and eat together and enjoy each other's fellowship.
Fantastic, man. Well, look, I want to switch gears here a little bit because we don't want to let this podcast go without your newest venture. Why don't you talk about this new thing you got going on with Dr. Gus Vickery? Tell us all about Apeiron and how it works and how you plan on using it to, of course, serve your clients and serve the community.
Mm. Yep. Thank you for that. Because I'm not a prophet, but I'm going to tell you that I foresee that my career is going to change for the good in a very different way here soon, because I believe that the future of healthcare lies in our knowledge of our own self. And I mean genetically. After the Human Genome Report made it possible for us to map out and sequence our own genes, we would leave that up to companies like 23andMe or Ancestry.com to provide just very, very basic raw data based on their interpretations. And that was simplified because it's based on other people who had their testing done that they could compare it to. So it's even really not, I mean, it's very, very, very shallow waters here. What we have through groups like Apeiron, and I'm working, you know, going through here in Asheville, it's a company called Apeiron Center of Human Performance, also based out of Houston. Dr. Dan Strickler, founder who leads this up. But we now have the ability to completely sequence an individual's DNA, give them that 80-page report, and then translator coach lifestyle changes based on their DNA, what we're talking about. And, you know, DNA is just simply the code for life.
Yep.
DNA is what dictates the color of your hair, the color of your skin, the height, you know, every detail about you physically. But we're not bound by DNA. So what I am now is an epigenetics coach. Epigenetics means the expression of DNA, the expression of the gene. And so we can turn it on when it's dormant, or we can turn it off when it's overactive. We just knowing what our DNA is gives us the blueprints for individual health. I'm like completely practical, customized bio individual health code. It's like, to me, is the most unbelievable thing on the scene right now.
I'd love to know, what have been your personal takeaways from this whole process? And, you know, how have they informed your decisions on how to eat and what lifestyle to live?
Specifically speaking, the process of, what are we talking about?
Oh, yeah, the writing the book.
Like just writing the book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, as I said before, I'm a completely changed person. And the book comes out of that. The book comes out of who I am
right
now. I'm so joyous and so much at peace and so confident that my life is, I'm living in what's called the sweet spot.
Yes.
Well, I don't believe that anything that I went through in the book was just for me. I believe that anything that I lived through is for other people. Jesus told Peter when he was attacked by Satan, Jesus said, Satan has desired to sift you as wheat, which that's pretty intimidating. But he said, I've prayed for you that your faith would maintain. And when you return, strengthen the brethren. So that's been my life mission, is to take what I've learned, take what I've experienced, take what I've, who I am now, or what I'm doing now, and give that to the world so that they don't have to live in chronic depression or unhealth or bad health or, you know, all these problems. We can prevent and we can optimize. And so every day that I live now is to live for the kingdom, to live for the world. How can we get this out to the people? And that can be face to face. You know, every day I'm praying, I'm seeking someone that I can bless, that I can help here locally. But and that's why I'm working so hard on the digital marketing piece, because I just want to see the world healed. Right? Holistically, body, mind, spirit.
Yes. I love it, man. I want you, like, there would be nothing to make me happier than to see you be the face of that message, you know?
With or without the beard?
Oh, I'm with the beard, man.
I'm getting ready to take a poll, because I'm wondering, should it come off? Has it been long enough?
Dude, I just heard my buddy's a special forces guy, and he was like saying something about possibly people being told to shave their beards. And I'm like, this is one step too far. I can't go with you there, homie. I mean, for one, my wife loves my beard.
Hey, the beard protects the pathogens from getting in my mouth. It's my mask. Exactly. It's my filter.
Yeah, man.
No, guys, I mean, I'm really excited about what's taking place. And I'm Danny, I know you were doing your DNA, and I think you're going to be really excited about what you find, just having the information. Because that's why, Mauda, you asked me, you know,
yeah,
I can't think of anything better that I can do right now.
Yeah.
I just, you know, if so I can help people to learn their own DNA, learn their health and how to, yeah. Because people have so many questions. Why am I fat? Why am I skinny? Why can't I put on muscle? Why do I constantly have runny nose and upper respiratory issues? Because in the DNA factor, we're going to find detoxifying pathways and, you know, where there's some issues there. You know, one of the things that I found out for me was I don't need as much protein as I thought. Like I would actually
might be hurtful for you.
Right. And it actually might be hurtful. Right.
Well, that's what I found is that I need to pull the protein back. And another thing that I was really discouraging was I don't do as well with saturated fats. I love saturated fats, but I do much better with monounsaturated fats. And so, you know, being able to know that,
yes.
And you wonder, why can't I get rid of this front belly pooch?
Yeah.
Well, in my case, get rid of the heavy cream. Stop using so much butter. Add in some olive oil. Salmon, and
amazing. Yeah.
Well,
such a huge difference.
Yeah, and I took it to heart when you told me something that I thought made so much sense, and even more sense that we're doing this together because, you know, all these experiments that I do are to find things out, and in reality, they're just all guessing. You know, so if I can have a better structure in place as far as like where, how far I need to go or what I even need to test and tweak, I'm going to get that with the genome mapping. Is that what we call it? Gene mapping or genome mapping?
Yep.
Well, yeah. Cause another thing is like, they don't always express, right? Just cause you have a snip.
Like now we talked about that with Robert.
Yeah. Like you have the results, but then also your lifestyle, like not everything expresses.
So you read the first chapter of my book in my hereditary angioedema. It's an autoimmune disorder, but it's a mutation in the F12 gene. That gene mutated. I don't know why, but it is what it is. It mutated.
Could have been your brother's passing. It could have been being sick.
Anything. It could be.
I mean, anything. Yeah. They don't know. There's no one knows why that gene would have mutated, but it did. And so now what, you know, so, so here's what the medical, world is going to say. You've got hereditary angioedema, carry an EpiPen and, or you could get a plasma transfusion, or you can take this, this medication that will, cost you your house and your car and all your investments. Now that, you know, because that it is what it is, the gene changed. But through epigenetics, I've switched the gene off. I'm like, I don't like that gene. Boom, I turned it off.
Amazing.
So now it doesn't mean that I don't have it. It's still there. It just means that it's not being expressed. And so my autoimmune is in complete remission.
Amazing.
Like if that doesn't convey the importance of doing this, I don't know what does.
Yeah, we have more power than we think.
Exactly. Exactly. We are not bound by our DNA. We just need to know what our DNA is so that we can change its expression.
Right. We need to know it. Yeah. I mean, I was literally just talking about this to my sister and to a friend of mine because, you know, my niece, she's been having some problems with her teeth and we're getting her minerals tested. But like, why aren't we swabbing babies, you know what I mean? Like we should be swabbing babies, obviously protected under HIPAA, you know, not 23andMe or anything, but swabbing babies at birth.
Yeah. So check this out with Aperon. When you get your test, they destroy your, there's nothing held. They don't keep anything. And so you're guaranteed that your DNA is not floating around out there being sold on Arabian black market.
Right.
It's still yours. But I'm totally with you on this because my kids are getting ready. I'm getting ready to test their DNA. And I think any parent, if they have the means to do so, it is probably the most beneficial thing that you can do for your children. Or if you're a grandparent, you have grandchildren, the earlier you have your DNA, and someone like me, an epigenetics coach that can translate it and show you what it's doing and how it can be changed, the earlier you have that, you are so far ahead of the game. It's not even funny.
Not even funny. It's so true.
Mauro's been talking about that for years.
What a great gift, grandparents. You hear that? So it's an amazing gift that you can give someone to know themselves, to know their kid. I mean, I know for me personally, I mean, a simple B12 supplement changed my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My entire life. Like so, because I didn't know. I have MTRR, yeah, homozygous, MTHFR. And it's just like my whole life, I just thought I was lazy or something. You know what I mean? Because I couldn't get out of bed.
You thought you were just tired. Well,
but there's a lot of stigma that goes with that. So it's like eventually you do just think you're lazy. You know, I couldn't get out of bed. Like I really just could not get out of bed. It just is the hardest thing every single day of my life to get out of bed. And then something so simple as the proper form of a B12 supplement.
Yep.
You know, so just, you know, but we didn't have that choice. I didn't have DNA back then. We have it now.
We have the technology. Yeah.
Let's do it, you know?
Yep. I totally agree. And going back to, you know, here I am a man of faith, but I'm also a man of science. But God created the knowledge of creation, which is science.
Exactly.
And Psalms 137 says that you are fearfully and wonderfully made in the Lord, and nothing shows that better than His fingerprint, which is DNA on your life. Like every one of us is so uniquely different, and that the DNA shows us how unique, how fearfully and wonderfully made each and every one of us are. It's so beautiful.
Wow.
Yep. It's empowering.
It is.
So, brother, tell us where people can find you, where they can find the book, and where they can find, you know, more information on the genetic stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm pretty easy to find. Instagram, Trent Hulbert, Facebook, Trent Hulbert Fitness. My website is TrentHulbertFitness.com. On the website, you won't see yet the epigenetics stuff there. You'll see my other services, but you can contact me via the website or direct email to TrentHulbert@gmail.com. And if you're interested in the epigenetics testing, it's very simple. We'll just send you the kit. It's a very simple saliva swab with a Q-tip, and then mail it back. We'll get your 80 to 90 page report and start consultations and get you going. So those are the easiest ways to find me: Instagram, Facebook, website, and email. The book, The Food God, you can find that at Amazon. It's going to be there, but also any book store, actually, because it's been distributed through Ingram Spark. So you can, if your bookstore doesn't sell it, they'll order it for you.
Perfect. Nice. Well, you can find it on our Amazon shop.
Yep.
It's on our Amazon store. We have all of our books, the book recommendations there.
Amazon.com/shop/fatfueledmom.
But either way, we'll put all of this stuff in the show notes, guys, so that you can find it. And also, I get so many questions all the time about the songs that we use at the end of our episodes, which I'm happy about because that's a thing. It's a thing for me. So those are also always linked, guys. So if you like the song, just go to the show notes. We've
been putting a lot of Christian music
on
there.
And it's going to be linked. It's usually going to be a SoundCloud link. So check it out.
Brother, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you guys. Love you.
Love you too, man.